The Genesis Communications Network is sponsored by the U.S. Money Reserve, your exclusive source for gold and silver precious metals. Visit them online at usmoneyreserve.com.
Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
With Gene and Chris, we've got a really fascinating episode to present to you today. We'll introduce the writer from the UK, Robbie Graham, and he has a book out that says everything in its title, and that is Silver Screen Saucers, How Flying Saucer Movies Might Have Influenced Our Popular Culture, and Vice Versa. A lot of questions to ask. I'm going to ask him first to start everything with Dave, the Earth Stood Still. Not the horrible remake with Keanu Reeves. Did you see the really bad remake of that movie?
Yes, I did.
You agree with me, though?
I don't think it was as bad as you make it out to be, because you hold the first in such high esteem, and I mean, it was one of the more pivotal moments in your life as a kid when you went and saw it. I didn't think it was that bad. It really didn't come close to matching the gravitas and the impact of the first one, obviously. But, you know, what can you do? The one thing I really would be interested in talking about today is how the pervasive sort of cultural meme of flying saucers has survived intact all the way to the present, and how that makes it very easy to, at a glance, look at an alleged photograph or film footage of a UFO and be able to tell right away if it's real or not. Your typical 50s version, the Adamski kind of craft, or the Billy Meyer beam ships later, which were, you know, the second generation Adamski craft. I mean, it's obvious that these are not real craft. And we have I think we have The Day the Earth Stood Still, Earth versus the Flying Saucers. We have those films to thank for creating a misperception in the public, and that makes it easy for us to look at a photograph and determine that it's a hoax.
Now, very interesting about Earth versus the Flying Saucers. This was a Ray Harryhausen special effects extravaganza. I thought they were really well done. By the way, one of the actors in Earth versus the Flying Saucers also played a role in Day the Earth Stood Still, but that's not the point. Point is here that Earth vs. the Flying Saucers was based very, very loosely on a real UFO book, all right? They bought one of the books from Major Donald Kehoe, and he mentioned in a subsequent book he thought they were going to do a documentary. And maybe the first 30 seconds of Earth vs. the Flying Saucers talks about UFO sightings in general, then becomes a decent science fiction film of aliens on the loose. I thought it was a well-done movie. A fairly low-budget movie, but very well done.
I love the shot of the UFO crashing into the Washington Monument.
Only Ray Harryhausen can do things like that. I mean, this is before we were using digital special effects to create anything, from Supergirl flying to the Fortress of Solitude with James Olsen being held by her, to anything else, or the Flash traveling at a speed that he can traverse dimensions. You know, we have special effects are really well done today, as all digital. You know, sometimes you have an actor in front of a blue screen or a green screen, but it's mostly digital. But here's somebody taking stop-motion animation and doing very well. Now, the special effects of the spaceship in Day the Earth Stood Still weren't bad. They're fairly well done, but one interesting thing about it, one of the noted UFO contactees of the 50s and 60s, Howard Menger, showed paintings of the UFO. He was a sign painter, and some of them look like the spaceship taking off at the end of Day the Earth Stood Still. It's kind of amazing how that film so much influenced the contactees, or was influenced by them. And I'll talk more about that film and the original short story on which it was based, and a very interesting twist in that short story, Farewell to the Master by Harry Bates, when we talk with our guests. Now, we mentioned briefly, because of the fact that a lot of the contactees came about after that film and were to some degree influenced by it. One of the examples is George Adamski. And funny thing happened, about a month ago, I received a letter from somebody who wanted us to have an interview with Glenn Stetling of the George Adamski Foundation. The who? The what? Well, of course, George Adamski was one of the early contactees. He was, I guess he had a hot dog stand at the foot of Mount Palomar, where they had the observatory in California. And he claimed to have met up with an alien being named of Orthon, wearing a silvery suit, similar, I gather, to the uniform that Michael Rennie as Klaatu wore in Day the Earth Stood Still. And I'm thinking here, this case was exposed as a fake nearly 60 years ago. Would you believe that? In fact, we actually had the expose online at jimmosley.com. If you look for the Adamski expose issue, you'll see a very well-written summary where even the people who allegedly witnessed George Adamski in the desert, they said, well, you know what, maybe we didn't see what we thought we saw. He claimed to have met an alien from Venus, a humanoid alien from Venus. Now, I don't know about you, but we all know that the surface conditions of Venus, in terms of our space probes, what they've revealed, is a little too hot. It's like boiling water is an icicle on Venus, to give you an example. But that's where Adamski claims some of his aliens came from.
You know, according to him, they were so hot, maybe they would have fit in on Venus. Who knows?
Well, you see, that's what a lot of these contactees had. They had very pretty women. Men were handsome. Women were pretty. But they came from Venus. Because they didn't really know much about science, these contactees. And so they would present their message in the form of an alien, because that was a cultural meme at the time. But Adamski was once quoted, and I think that's in the Adamski expose issue. It's been years since I read it. Saying that sometimes you have to enter through the back door to express the truth. And he presented a belief of peace and brotherhood, no wars, no nuclear wars, that sort of thing. But if George Adamski expresses that point of view, who cares? He's just a hot dog salesman, you know. But if it comes from the mouths of advanced extraterrestrials, maybe it has more credibility. What I worry about, though, is after all these years, people still believe Adamski. In fact, I exchanged maybe 8 or 9 letters with the person promoting this Adamski Foundation website. And he didn't seem to have a grasp of any of these issues. Even when I referred him to the George Adamski expose issue, he said, well, it's just opinion. And I said, read it. It's pointing out that people who claim to have witnessed Adamski in the desert watching a UFO land didn't see that. That's not an opinion. That's a fact. Doesn't understand the difference. The one thing that I really kind of stumped him was when I said Adamski claims his space people came from Venus. We all know that's not possible, at least based on what we know about Venus. All right? That, I wrote a few days ago, never got a response. I think I ended it there because they can't answer that. But you see, there's a problem with the UFO field, and that is that no hoax goes punished. You can have a hoax, something that's proven to be a fake, and it just comes right back like nothing happened. People still think it's real. People still think there's some basis to it. And George Adamski's an example. Like I said, if you're on the fence, or maybe you've read some books where people are in favor of Adamski, go look at the Adamski expose issue from 1957 at jimmosley.com. And you read that and you'll get a good handle. Oh, by the way, the first part of Adamski's book, Flying Saucers Have Landed, has material from Desmond Leslie about ancient astronauts, which means that Leslie was one of the early people, ahead of most everybody else, even Eric von Daniken, one of the early people to write about ancient astronauts. In any case, we have Robbie Graham, direct from his palatial estate or flying saucer, silver flying saucer, in the UK, author of Silver Screen Saucers with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
I know that a lot of our listeners are interested in UFOs, the issue of giant skeletons found in America, paranormal investigations, and what the top researchers think about such topics. One online magazine has been presenting such unusual information since 1985. It is Alternate Perceptions Magazine at apmagazine.info. Use their search function to find articles on just about every topic imaginable. That's apmagazine.info. Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom106.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 106.com. Go to freedom106.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom106.com.
Serious investors and traders want to make 81% return in 60 seconds? Use the same secret algorithm professional hedge fund managers use to make billions of dollars of profits. Turn $250 into $4,903 in just 7 clicks of a mouse. Our tool is so simple that my 82-year-old grandmother can use it to make insane stock market profits. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. Watch the free video before the hedge funds make us take it down. Go to BigBuckRiches.com. From the Robert Allen System, current returns not indicative of future results.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
The book is Silver Screen Saucers, Sorting Fact from Fantasy in Hollywood's UFO Movies. The author is Robbie Graham. And we welcome him to the Paracast. Thank you, Robbie, for joining us.
Well, thank you, Gene. It's a pleasure.
And I notice here that you have a foreword written by Bryce Zabel, who's an old friend of ours. He, of course, was producer of Dark Skies.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, absolutely. It's a privilege to have Bryce write the foreword for the book. And, of course, Bryce's own TV show, Dark Skies, that you just mentioned, that plays a significant part in the story of this book as well. So we can get into that later if you're interested.
I wanted to start with Day the Earth Stood Still.
Sure.
Because this movie had such an influence on popular culture, especially the way in which we viewed UFOs and possible alien visitors. And I mentioned in the previous segment how Howard Menger, who they called the Jerzy Adamski, had paintings of UFOs that looked very much like the flying saucer that left at the end of Day the Earth Stood Still. It was directed by Robert Wise, who, by the way, also did Sound of Music and the first Star Trek movie. And according to a friend of ours, Tim Beckley, Robert Wise believed in UFOs.
He did, that's right. He was also a friend of Paul Davids, the writer-producer who made the 1994 movie Roswell, which really helped popularize the Roswell event and pushed it further into popular culture. Paul Davids recounted having lunch with Robert Wise one time, and Robert Wise basically describing how during the shoot of that film, various men from Washington, scientists, engineers, approached him and told him various things about flying saucers, and it was through these conversations he had with these guys from Washington that he came to believe that this was something that was very serious and that was treated seriously by officialdom.
Okay, this is Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, to go back, it was based on a short story called Farewell to the Master by Harry Bates. But there was a character named Klaatu, and there was a robot by a slightly different name than Gort. Gort sounds better in a sci-fi movie. But the robot was the master in the short story. They didn't have that twist because they were focusing on a message from Klaatu that we got to stop being warlike, otherwise we will be destroyed.
Right.
Now, a lot of that was added to the movie. It's only, I think, superficially close to that of the short story, right?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, Hollywood always takes creative license when adapting short stories and novels. You know, some of these are necessary changes for the screen. Some of them are just, yeah, as you say, I think just down to artistic preference. But I mean, to address the, I think the question that you were hinting at there with the parallels between the reports of the early contactees and the details of the early flying saucer movies, in order for me to address that properly, I think I should start by saying that UFOs, this is my position essentially, you know, UFOs are real in the sense that they exist independently of cinema and of pop culture more broadly. So, you know, UFOs have been investigated by governments around the world for almost 7 decades. And, you know, what the phenomenon represents is, of course, open for debate. And, you know, various theories have been put forward, from secret military aircraft to otherworldly intelligences, natural phenomena. But the point is that even in a world without UFO movies, people would continue to report UFOs. So people were reporting UFOs and even specifically flying saucers long before Hollywood started to get in on this act. Basically, my position is that ufology, such as it is, informs Hollywood more than Hollywood informs ufology, which is to say that Hollywood engages with the UFO subculture in a parasitic fashion. It sucks on the veins of this 70-year-old subculture, and it grabs hold of fringe ideas and it popularizes them through the science fiction genre. So terms like Men in Black, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or the Fourth Kind, Area 51, Hollywood didn't create these terms. They were all part of the common language of ufology decades before Hollywood lifted them. Now, in Hollywood's UFO movies, then, broadly speaking, you can say that art imitates life. Now, when it comes to UFOs, I think it's fair to say that Hollywood produces depictions, albeit not faithful ones, of what people have actually reported. Now, that's not to say that what's been reported in ufology is necessarily true or accurate, and often it's not, but merely that Hollywood does see dramatic potential in these fact-based reports. So Hollywood does draw extensively from this fact-based discourse. So the thing that I explore in my book is this notion of hyper-reality, where we are unable or unwilling to distinguish between fact and fantasy, and the role that popular entertainment plays in this process. So the existence of UFOs is already rejected by consensus reality. But the presentation of this UFO discourse on screen, and particularly within the context of the science fiction genre, a fantastical genre in a fantastical medium, this process serves to blur the boundaries between UFO fact and fantasy. And it leaves us in this permanent state of hyper-reality where UFOs are simultaneously real and unreal in the popular consciousness.
We had movies other than The Day the Earth Stood Still in the 50s. So, for example, there is a film back in 1950, which is, of course, when Behind the Flying Saucers was released by Frank Scully and Major Keogh had his first book on UFOs 3 years after the Arnold case, called The Flying Saucer. It was a low-budget movie where supposedly the CIA and the KGB get together to investigate UFOs in Alaska.
That's right.
I remember it being a very dull movie.
It's a very dull movie. It's the first UFO movie that was ever made. Yeah, as you say, it's very dull. It's a low-budget affair, released in 1950, shot in 1949, so just 2 years after UFOs exploded into the popular consciousness following the Kenneth Arnold sighting of June 1947. Interestingly, I mean, I'd say the only interesting thing about the film really is the fact that the flying saucer of the title eventually proves to be a Soviet creation, and aliens don't even get considered in the movie, which was kind of reflective of popular opinion about UFOs in the very early years and early months of the phenomenon. In a number of public opinion polls that were taken, people seemed to be inclined towards believing that UFOs, if they were indeed real, were the product of foreign technologies or even American technologies. Aliens didn't really figure on people's radars, and that didn't start to then change until towards the late 40s and then into the early 50s. And then by that time, the extraterrestrial hypothesis had sunk firmly into popular consciousness, at least within the UFO subculture. And that's what stayed to this day. That's what's really stuck, although other theories have been put forward. So yeah, that was the first movie in 1950. And that was a very blatant attempt to cash in on this growing source of hysteria that had begun a few years prior. In order to address your question about the early contactees, you know, what I say again about the influence and impact of UFO movies is that they are the dominant cultural force shaping our perceptions of the UFO phenomenon. They do so often without conscious intent, usually as a natural cultural process, but sometimes there have been efforts to willfully manipulate our perceptions of this phenomenon through mass media.
I want to ask you more about The Day the Earth Stood Still in our next segment, focusing primarily on the fact that military people were in the background in the creative process, and whether there was a motive there or they just wanted to observe it or make decisions with regard to how the military was treated. Now, I'll give you some other things about that movie that are very interesting. All right? So let's just get back into it here.
Sure.
So we have Robbie Graham, author of Silver Screen Saucers, with Gene and Chris, you're in
The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockheed Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockheedPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockheedPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockheedPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Planning to buy food storage? Wait a minute. Many companies try to confuse you with the number of servings they sell. It's not about the number of servings. It's about the number of calories. In emergencies, calories mean survival. Go to ReadySupplyFoods.com for a comparison of leading companies. Ready Supply Foods sells the most calories per dollar of any company. Our 23 entrees and breakfasts are delicious and full of nutritious calories. The new leader in value and quality. Go to ReadySupplyFoods.com today.
Biochemistry determines your mood, memory, energy, and endurance. Your body's primary metabolic function is to make protein. One World Whey is a unique, non-denatured protein. This enables your body to have virtually 100% utilization, whereas typical whey protein powders offer no more than 18% utilization of protein. One World Whey also delivers life-giving frequencies to your cells. The net result for so many people is improved energy, mood, and elimination of pain from inflammation.
This technologically enhanced One World Whey has been really amazing for me. I'm 36 years old, and for the past several years, I've been struggling with lack of energy, drive, and stamina. And after just 2 weeks on this product, I'm feeling so much more energy. My yoga practice has deepened, and as a massage therapist, I'm able to see more clients than I've been able to in years. I've never felt results that quick with anything I've ever taken.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson, Adam Pulaski of the Pulaski Law Firm with Principal Office in Houston, Texas, is the attorney responsible for the content of this ad. This ad is not legal advice, and the choice of a lawyer should not be based solely upon advertisement. Services may not be available in all states.
Attention Xarelto users. If you or a loved one took Xarelto and suffered a serious bleeding event, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Xarelto is a popular prescription blood thinner used to prevent blood clots and protect patients from strokes. These serious bleeding events have led to numerous cases of hospitalization and even death. Phone lines are open 24-7. Call 800-261-0937. That's 800-261-0937.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
75 years ago, America suffered one of the worst moments in American history, the attack on Pearl Harbor. Now you can remember December 7th, 1941, with the purchase of the first ever 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-490-3200 right now for the official 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve, the only company authorized to distribute these 100% solid gold coins. Remember Pearl Harbor with this limited official gold release. 1-800-490-3200 or online at usmoneyreserve.com.
My dad was 59 when he collapsed from a heart attack late last year. Just this past August was when we spread his ashes on the St. Croix River. I loved my dad, but boy was he stubborn. He hadn't been to the doctor in over 25 years. His excuse? He simply couldn't afford it. He wasn't a rich man by any means. At less than $107 per month, LibertyOnCall.org would have been the perfect alternative for my father. Don't wait. Go to LibertyOnCall.org right now. For not just your sake, but for the sake of your loved ones. Again, that's LibertyOnCall.org.
Hi, this is Ted Phillips, listening to the Paracast, and it's as good as it gets, believe me.
We have a second radio show we'd like you to listen to. It's called After the Paracast, and it can include interviews, anything that's on our mind, Chris and I, or color commentary. And we offer it exclusively to members of the Paracast Plus. We also give you the enhanced version of this show without the network ads, higher quality audio, and more features to come. A modest subscription fee. Check it out, plus.theparacast.com, plus.theparacast.com. The book is Silver Screen Saucers, Sorting Fact from Fantasy and Hollywood's UFO Movies by Robbie Graham. Returning to the day the Earth stood still, which is, I think, one of the best of the early UFO-oriented movies, and it seemed to influence popular culture. But, Robbie, I don't know if you know this fact. And that is, do you remember where Michael Rennie's Klaatu was shot down by the military in the later part of the movie?
Yeah.
Off DuPont Circle?
Mm.
Do you know what UFO organization set up its headquarters very near that?
I do not.
NICAP. Major T.O.'s organization. It was just off DuPont Circle, near the location where the character Klaatu was shot in that movie. Don't ask me how that happened to be. It may have just been a matter of having a rental available.
How did that happen to be?
Well, you know, NICAP wanted to be in Washington, D.C. They probably wanted something that was fairly inexpensive. It was a small suite of offices, not a real elaborate place. And that happened. And the first time I saw the movie, I didn't think about it. Later, when I finally visited NICAP headquarters, I thought to myself, this is near that location where they shot Klaatu.
Yeah, I should have had that in the book, really.
We could have the second edition. You didn't talk to me. I didn't make a big deal of it. I think I've mentioned it on the PowerCast occasionally. Now, I would have to go back and look at 1536 Connecticut Avenue Northwest and how close that was to the point at which Michael Rennie was shot
yeah.
in that film.
There's so many examples of kind of real life intersecting with Hollywood fantasy when it comes to UFOs. Again, I'm edging towards answering your question about the parallels between that movie and some of the early contactee reports. And I think, again, to lead into it, what I say is that the effect of cinema broadly, I think, is macro and indirect rather than micro and direct. So it can and does influence our beliefs and expectations, but not necessarily our direct actions, although that can happen. So I think more broadly, the effect of movies is soft and cumulative, but no less significant for that. So a non-ufological example would be if you are inclined to go and do a mass shooting, then you're likely to do that whether or not you've seen a movie featuring a mass shooting. If you're a psycho, you're a psycho. You know, movies often don't directly influence behavior, but they can have a cumulative effect on our beliefs and expectations about the world, which of course can lead to then direct action, but it's usually not so observable in an immediate sense. So when it comes to the contactees, Adamski, for example, Howard Menger, as you mentioned, I find it impossible to draw any conclusions where they're concerned. Aspects of some of their testimonies I find interesting, even some of them vaguely convincing if they were to be separated from their more outrageous claims, but of course we can't separate them from their more outrageous claims. But what I say is I don't automatically and totally discount the claims of people who are prone to fantasy, because if UFOs are ontologically real, which, you know, on some level of our perceived reality they seem to be, then surely these objects are also perceptible to fantasists. Now, in other words, even a fantasist can see a UFO.
So getting back to the day the Earth stood still, and Robert Weiss mentioning the military participation, did they dictate at all the focus of the movie, which, of course, is kind of a peacenik point of view, which is you get your act together, Earthlings, but not completely, because the carrot and stick approach, because Klaatu says you either stop wars, you can join the Space Brotherhood, or we'll nuke you, or whatever they do to destroy us.
Yeah. Well, the answer to that is, have to be pure speculation, because we just simply don't know. All we have is Robert Wise's statements, secondhand statements, that he interacted with some people from Washington who advised him on various aspects of UFOs, and he came away with the conclusion that this was treated seriously in Washington, which of course we know it was from officially declassified files. It's no secret that this was taken seriously by the powers that be in the early years. So that's no surprise. Whether or not these people from Washington were acting in an official capacity, whether or not they drip-fed him any information or disinformation, who knows? What we do know is that going back to the very early years of Hollywood's engagement with UFOs, the military and intelligence communities in the United States have been very interested in Hollywood's depictions of this sensitive subject. And on numerous occasions throughout the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond, various branches of officialdom have sought to monitor and sometimes manipulate UFO-themed products.
Okay, this is just very interesting. And we go to the next film in the series, which I mentioned, that was Earth versus the Flying Saucers, which is a somewhat typical Aliens on the Loose, except that before they made that film, they bought a book by Major Donald Kehoe. Now, why would they do that? Because, in a sense, it's like the first 30 seconds of the film talk about UFOs, and then they don't. Is it because they felt that the word flying saucers, because it's used in Major Kehoe's books, was maybe owned by him and they needed to have the rights to use that term?
I really don't know. There's very little been done on this. This is the 1956 film Earth versus the Flying Saucers, as you say, and it was loosely, very, very, very loosely inspired by Kehoe's non-fiction book, Flying Saucers from Outer Space, which is a serious examination of the subject.
And it was the first UFO book I ever read.
Right. So this, and it was, you know, it was influential as well. A lot of Kehoe's work was influential, and he was taken seriously, you know, relatively seriously. And but this film was an absolutely schlocky B movie, you know, with rubbery aliens and flying saucers, done by Ray Harryhausen. Actually,
I liked the special effects of the.
The saucers
flying
are good.
Saucers. I thought that the aliens wearing these silly robotic suits.
Yeah, the aliens are dumb. But actually, underneath the underneath their robotic suits, they bear an uncanny resemblance to the now archetypal alien greys. These bald-headed, black-eyed beings, kind of spindly beings. So that's an interesting element. Again, you know, how influential that has been on pop culture or vice versa is hard to say.
Well, we can always mention Whitley Strieber. We think Whitley Strieber was one of the early people to be in touch with possible spindly gray aliens. Mm-hmm. But we have a movie from 1956. I don't know how well that movie did at the box office.
Well, these films were made predominantly for teens at the drive-in. You know, these B movies. The difference there was that the Daliest was still in 1951, which was really the first serious movie ever made about UFOs. And in 1951, you had two feature films, two kind of major feature films about the subject, which was The Thing from Another World, directed by Howard Hawks, and The Daliest Stood Still. One alien came to kill us, and one came in peace, but also to kill us if we didn't become peaceful. So these were the two films that hit us in 1951, but then for the rest of the decade, most of the films that followed were these schlocky B movies, as I say, and they had a very specific target audience. They didn't have, you know, they weren't taken seriously. They weren't award-winning films by any stretch of the imagination. But I think it's fair to say that they did have cultural impact. Absolutely. Yeah. And these films certainly went on to influence a whole generation of Hollywood filmmakers, the likes of Steven Spielberg and others, who would then go on to make their own alien movies and have their own UFO obsessions. So they do have cultural impact.
We'll cover more of this in just a moment. Silver Screen Saucers. Really fascinated by this. And we have Robbie Graham to sort things out for us with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Conspiracy Journal is your number one source for the hidden world of the weird and strange. We bring you thought-provoking and controversial material for free-thinking individuals who are seeking what is really going on in our world today. Some of this material may adversely affect you. Other pieces are meant to enlighten. Either way, be prepared to be intrigued by such things as the reality of UFOs, ghosts, strange creatures from time and space, hidden conspiracies, time travel, Nikola Tesla, suppressed technology, and a whole lot more. You can find out more by visiting our website at conspiracyjournal.com. There you can sign up for our free weekly newsletter sent directly to your email address. Find out what they don't want you to know.
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy.
Remember Pearl Harbor. Now you can buy, for the first time ever, the 75th anniversary Pearl Harbor legal tender solid gold coin from the U.S. Money Reserve. Call 1-800-329-6700 right now or go online to usmoneyreserve.com. 1-800-329-6700.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey purified water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest price filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
Owe $10,000 or more to the IRS?
Get on board with the Tax Admiral! Don't take on the IRS alone! I'll cut penalties and reduce your overall tax bill sometimes! I can even get it zeroed out completely!
We're an A-rated company helping people clean up their mess with the IRS.
If you owe $10,000 or more, then call the Tax Admiral!
Call 800-287-7180. Again, that's 800-287-7180. 800-287-7180.
I'm Nick Soboleski, a SelectQuote agent with a true story that could save you hundreds of dollars a year. A woman named Linda just called. Her husband, Ray, has a $300,000 group life insurance policy, but is changing jobs and can't take it with him. Well, I impartially shot the highly rated term life insurance companies we represent and found Ray, who is 41 and takes medication to control his cholesterol, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $26 a month. That's almost twice the coverage for less than half of what he had paid. If SelectQuote hasn't shopped for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 1-800-403-4885. That's 1-800-403-4885. 1-800-403-4885. Or go to SelectQuote.com. We shop. You save. Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
Silver Screen Saucers. Exciting book. By Robbie Graham. Chris, you had some comments to make.
Yeah, I remember attending a history of film class in college and my instructor making the observation that the Howard Hawks movie, The Thing from Another World, I believe was the full title, was the first film where the director insisted that the actors step on each other's lines and talk over each other. And if you look at historical film facts, that movie, the Hawks movie, is considered to be the first modern film in terms of dialogue not ending and then the next person speaking. It seemed more lifelike and actually created more tension within the portrayal of the script. And I was kind of fascinated by that. You'll notice in the remake that was done in the 80s, I believe, or 1990 with Kurt Russell.
82, yeah.
Yeah, 82. Okay, it was that long ago. They make a point of having a cacophony of dialogue at points where you can't really understand what anybody's saying because it's just so it's over the top with people stepping on each other's lines. I just thought I'd pop that little factoid out.
I'll give you another one. Another factoid. The person who played the Thing.
Arness.
James Arness. The brother of Peter Graves from Mission Impossible, and of course, best known as Marshal Matt Dillon. But yeah. He had to start somewhere. So in a sense, he started as a voiceless monster, just like Boris Karloff in Frankenstein in 1931-32 was a voiceless monster, except for going,
The original Thing from Another World in 1951 had parallels with Roswell. This was 1951, as obviously Roswell was 1947. But Roswell, as we know, didn't break into pop culture until well, I mean, the story didn't emerge until the late 1970s, but then it was another, you know, a good amount of time, another decade at least, before people started to really look into it in ufology. And then it was not until the early 1990s that it started to break big in pop culture, and that was through Hollywood. That was through the Roswell movie that I mentioned, and through the X-Files and other movies. So that took a long time to go from subculture to pop culture. But that film, The Thing from Another World, did have these striking parallels, because what you had was, in the narrative of that movie, a UFO crash in a remote location, a team sort of uncovering the wreckage, recovering a body. And you've got the press in that movie trying to expose the story, and the military trying to cover it up. So you've got some of these broad parallels, which have been observed by various researchers, and some speculate again that this was an early attempt to kind of leak some kind of truth through Hollywood. There's a lot of speculation about what role Hollywood has played in shaping popular perceptions of UFOs, and whether or not any of these movies contain factual information, kind of inside information, shall we say, and whether or not this information has been sort of seeded by intelligence agencies, by the military, etc. So it's hard to draw conclusions when it comes to the idea of a Hollywood UFO conspiracy. It's not so hard to make statements along the lines of, yes, Hollywood has certainly been influenced by various branches of officialdom. When it comes to the agenda, that's harder to pin down.
Well, of course, if you want to look at parallels, we go to Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It was loosely based on a book by J. Allen Hynek.
Yeah, The UFO Experience. The UFO Experience, I believe.
And Hynek appears towards the end of the film, where the flying saucer is making its landing approach, and you see him kind of
stroking his
chin.
Yeah.
And you have also other possibility characters that...
Yeah, well...
We have the Francois Truffaut character, and the character's name is Claude Lacom.
Yeah, and he was
based on... loosely based on Jacques Vallée.
Well, he was. Yeah, he was based on Jacques Vallée. And, Jacques Vallée wanted to convince Spielberg to go down the line of interdimensional beings rather than extraterrestrial. He consulted with Spielberg, had lunch with him during the production and development of the movie. And, you know, because, of course, Spielberg wanted Vallée's perspective on it, because, of course, you know, Vallée was and continues to be one of the most thoughtful and influential people in the field. And so Spielberg consulted with both Hynek, who served as the official consultant on the movie, and then less formally with Vallée. And Vallée said, you know, Steven, it would be much more interesting if you were to have these beings as being real but interdimensional rather than extraterrestrial. And Spielberg said, well, you know, that's probably a more interesting idea, but the audiences are expecting aliens in the more traditional sense, and so that's what we're going to give them.
Now, the point is here, the movie never specifies where these aliens are from.
It doesn't.
Just aliens. They could be from anywhere.
Sure. Absolutely. It doesn't specify. I think the assumption is that they're extraterrestrial. I think when it comes to interdimensional ideas of interdimensionality, I suppose the general assumption is that you would be dealing with something slightly more bizarre and ethereal than these kind of physical beings and technological craft. Although, who is to say interdimensional entities wouldn't be the same? So I think when people get into fights over extraterrestrials versus interdimensionals, it seems like a really pointless kind of fight. I think most people would even struggle to define what interdimensional would even mean. And could extraterrestrials also be interdimensional? Well, according to speculative science, then certainly that could be the case. So I don't tend to get bogged down in these kinds of debates. I find it, after 15 years of looking at this subject, I find it impossible to draw any conclusions about the nature of UFOs.
What interested me is the way the aliens communicated with the people they wanted to take with them, this kind of technology sharing or whatever. So the Richard Dreyfuss, Roy Neary character, and the Melinda Dillon, Julian Giler character, where they receive subconscious messages.
That's right.
Where obviously Roy Neary is kind of making his mashed potatoes into a mountain.
Mm.
Where he's drawn to that place, where they try to reach out to him.
Yeah, they call them implantees in the movie, which of course are, you know, they're contactees and everything but name, where they as in real life, you know, with real life so-called contactees who claim to have telepathic messages or implanted messages in their subconscious or in their, you know, in the depths of their brains. They say the same occurs in Close Encounters, because of course Steven Spielberg based his screenplay on ufology. That was his primary influence. Spielberg grew up as a UFO buff, and he was obsessed with the subject. His first movie as a 16-year-old boy, feature-length film, which was released locally in his local cinema, was called Firelight, and that was about UFO abductions, and that was the blueprint for Close Encounters of the Third Kind. So Steven Spielberg was a huge UFO buff. He'd read a lot of the literature, and this was something that he treated very seriously. He thought, you know, he described the film as science speculation rather than science fiction, and so everything in that movie is inspired in some way by something that's appeared in the ufological literature,
including the outbreak in 1973 in Indiana of several events that were loosely based on for the movie, and especially the airliner scene at the very beginning, and of course the blackout scene. And you can go back and trace some very, very similar type reports from Indiana in 73. So a lot of that was actually based on real UFO reports with the Spielbergian sort of Hollywood twist or thread that kind of tied them all together with the characters.
Mm. And that film was significant as well in the context of official involvement or non-involvement, shall we say, because Steven Spielberg did seek the cooperation of the Air Force and NASA in order to cut costs and boost authenticity. But the Air Force and NASA both strongly denied their cooperation to him on this film, on the grounds that, you know, the film was about UFOs, and historically, you know, since the closure of Blue Book in 1969, the Air Force had been, you know, reaffirming its policy that they had no interest in UFOs and would not cooperate on any Hollywood product which really engaged with the subject, especially a product which put forward the idea that there was a giant UFO conspiracy. And so the Air Force strongly denied its cooperation to Spielberg. And then NASA, according to Spielberg, actually sent him a 20-page letter requesting that he not make the movie at all, because they were worried that it would spark a huge wave of UFO sightings, and that NASA would have to deal with this, and it would make people freak out about UFOs like Jaws had about sharks, which had been made 2 years earlier. Spielberg made Jaws, which is at the time the most successful film of all time. And then Star Wars would overtake it.
Let's go into more of this in our next segment with Robbie Graham. Silver Screen Saucers with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Are you worried about your mom or dad living alone in their house? Hi, I'm Joan London. Listen, I know how difficult it is to find senior care for someone you love. That's why I recommend a free service called A Place for Mom. They are the nation's largest senior living referral service. Call A Place for Mom today.
To receive free information on senior living communities in your area, call A Place for Mom at 1-800-704-6182.
A Place for Mom offers free one-on-one advice from local advisors and a personalized list of senior living communities you can visit. If you have questions about senior care for your mom or dad, there's A Place for Answers, A Place for Mom.
Call A Place for Mom in the next 10 minutes to get your free ebook on financing senior care as well as free information on senior living communities in your area. Call 1-800-704-6182. That's 1-800-704-6182.